All right, you beautiful bastards. Neil, what is going on this week, man?
Kind of a rough week, honestly. One of my aunts passed last night. It's been kind of a
Sorry to hear that.
decline for
Sorry to
her.
hear
So on the
that.
one hand, it's tough, but I think she's in a better
It was
place.
time. It was time. How old was she?
I think in her late 60s. She's younger than my
Late
mom.
sixties. Well, that's too young to go, but was she sick? I mean, she must have been.
Honestly, like, we weren't entirely sure what was up. The doctors weren't really giving us a lot of concrete answers. But
Yeah.
it's gonna be complications of COVID now.
Yeah, sure. Well,
Sorry. Yeah, sorry to hear that, man.
this episode will be dedicated in her memory, and
No, I don't want to dedicate this one to her.
we'll wait for a good movie and then we'll do that.
Yeah,
Okay,
Sam,
sounds
I liked this aunt.
good. Okay. So aside from your aunt, what else has been going on?
Just trying to figure out some next steps, sending some more job applications, trying to make a final decision on some extra schooling, and a friend got me a neck and shoulder massager for my birthday, and that is pretty much my only joy in life right
Damn.
but it is phenomenal.
Nice.
Yeah, that sounds good.
That's good.
In
Well,
fact, I
might just turn it on right now.
there you go.
there are it has been my experience in life that when a bunch of bad shit happens to you right in a row, it means something good's right around the corner. Life, no losing streak lasts forever. That's what I would say. So if you're ahead lies daylight, is probably what I'd say. All right, well, Gideon, how's it been, man?
Pretty good. Been a little stressful with work stuff, but other than that, got to watch Tron, and immediately after I rewatched Tron Legacy for like probably the first time in over 10 years. I remember seeing it in theaters, and I don't know, I must have maybe watched it like one more time, like at a friend's house or something. But obviously I love Daft Punk, so I remember listening to the soundtrack a lot.
Right.
And then I also rewatched Midsommar last night
Oh, nice.
for the second time, so that was fun. Fun.
Yeah,
Other than
woohoo, fun time watching Midsommar.
that, I still, enjoyed it, really appreciate it. I really like Ari Aster's stuff. I still need to watch Eddington. And then haven't been doing too much else. I'm almost done reading Batman Year One. We're gonna finish that up tonight. We're on the last chapter, and then I'm level 91 in Fortnite because over the weekend they had like a double XP weekend, so I gained like fucking like 30 levels. I was just going
Hello
crazy.
levels. Nice.
Yeah, hella levels. So. Almost done with like the main, but then there's always it's like you get to level 100, you get everything in the main pass, and then like you can go to level 200, and there's like alternate skins and bonus
Right,
stuff.
right, right.
But I got to like I think the beginning of November or something, so I got plenty of time.
Okay. Hey, you got time. Neil, I'm gonna drop some key Gideon lore on you, okay?
Uh-oh.
You're gonna love this. So speaking of Daft Punk, for the talent show in like sixth
Oh
grade, maybe it
yeah.
was eighth grade, Gideon, are you familiar with Neil, are you familiar with the video called Daft Hands, where the guy has the lyrics to Harder, Better, Faster, Stronger written on his hands, and he like shows his fingers in sequence to the lyrics like on YouTube. It's just his hands.
I am not familiar with that, no.
Like an
Okay,
old viral
well,
video.
It was like one of the very first YouTube viral videos, and Gideon recreated it perfectly and did the entire Daft Hands thing for the entire Central Middle School audience, and it was totally awesome. But hearing
So,
Daft Punk reminded me of that.
dude, and so I did it like 3 different years, but I did a different song each time. So I did Harder, Better, Faster, Stronger, which is very easy, and then I did Technologic, which was like a lot of fucking words all over my hands, and then I did One More Time, and that was, yeah, I'm so glad I did that. That was just such a fun, like, little. Yeah, a little bit of lore for me. But man, I think fondly back to that, because people would always be like, "Oh my God, weren't you in the talent show? You did the Daft Dance thing." I was like, "Oh, dude, it was good times, man. Good memories."
You're like, bitches, get in line. No autographs, baby.
My dad and I have always had very different feelings about a lot of music. Some of it I get on some level, but the one that stands out to me was I remember buying some Daft Punk CDs in high school, and I asked if we could play them on like a road trip, and Around the World came on, and it like broke my dad. He just like didn't get it. And it was just like no more of my music for the rest of the trip.
No. That's so sad. Damn.
That was like that's like my parents taking me to go see the Pokemon movie when I was like 8. And to the day when I'm like, do you guys want to watch a movie? My dad's like, it's not gonna be like the Pokemon movie, is it? I'm like, Dad, it's Fargo. It's different. It's like a real movie.
And you were a kid, dude. Like,
Yeah, I'm like, Dad, this was literally 25 years ago. Like, can we get over this now?
on.
Yeah. All right. What and again, we've been playing Gears of War together.
Yes, we're almost
So
done.
we're almost done, yeah.
We're on the final act, probably on like the final chapter, because we're like right about to board the train. And the train, from what I remember, I don't even know if you like fight your way through the train or if it just is like a cutscene and then you get to the boss battle. Maybe a little bit of fighting. I really can't remember because I haven't played since probably 2007 or something. But yeah, dude, it's been fun, you know. It's kind of a buggy, shitty, low effort remaster, but it's been fun just shooting the shit and playing it and. You know, the novelty of you playing on PlayStation, me on Xbox is really cool. So, I've been enjoying it for that, and it's like something we kind of never thought would happen. So, it's been cool.
Yeah, that's kind of where I'm at with it, man. It's like it is a fun game in and of itself. Like the bones of Gears of War are as strong as they've ever been. I think the remaster effort is like the laziest remaster I've ever seen in my life, from
It's
like
so
right up
bad.
there with like it's just like
It's so
unreal
buggy, dude. Yeah.
how buggy and like horrible it is. But I'm still having fun, and we've been shooting the shit, and it's been all right. And plus, we're almost done with it. It's just not a long game, and it's
Yeah.
pretty easy breezy. And you piece up some guys with the Nasher, you hit them with the chainsaw.
You get
It's
the
all well and
active
good.
reload, you get that nice.
Yeah, it's all fun anyway. That's okay. What have I been up to? I finished the Resident Evil 1 Chris campaign, which actually took me twice as long as the Jill campaign, purely because Chris doesn't have as many inventory spaces. So I spent like a solid 4 to 5 hours running back through the mansion, picking up more items, opening more doors, just annoying shit like that. So Chris's campaign almost broke me, but I did it. What else? I finished Metal Gear Solid 3 Delta. I think it's a really good entry point for people who want to play Metal Gear Solid 3 but don't want to go play the PS2 game. I have some issues with it as like a fan of the original, and like a really nerdy specific kind of complaints about like the pressure sensitive buttons and things like that, but overall thought it was really good. I'm very excited for the Nintendo Direct that's coming on Friday. That will be awesome. And excited, of course, to finish Gears of War. Excited to jump more into Hollow Knight probably over the weekend. But no, otherwise it's been a busy week for me. I'm glad that it's starting tomorrow. It's finally going to be slowing down, and then I'll have a pretty probably a pretty slow weekend. So, yeah, everything's fine. I will be. Well, let's go ahead and jump into this week's movie, which we're going to be talking about the 1982 classic, Tron. And Gideon, why did you want to bring Tron of all movies to the pod? Aside from that, there's a sequel coming out soon.
Yeah, so a couple reasons. I'd never seen it. The main reason, yeah, Tron Ares, I think, comes out next month. I've been getting pretty excited for it. I'd only ever seen Tron Legacy. I remember really liking Tron Legacy in the theater, but haven't really revisited that much. But always, was or the soundtrack was like a big hit with our family around that time. And I remember getting like we got the CD for Christmas, and it was on this like weird black disc. It was just like cool. I remember like our Xbox like couldn't read it because it was like black, so it was just like kind of a funny memory. And so for a while, for like many years, I'd kind of just like written off the original because a friend of mine told me he just kind of thought it was like laughable in like the visual effects, how it was like almost like a CGI movie before CGI was like invented, is like how he told me. But I was like, I should give it a shot. I feel like with a lot of times, usually it's like the OG or the original is like more beloved than the sequel. And I'll talk about my thoughts on revisiting Tron Legacy later on. But yeah, so I was like, yeah, let's watch it. None of us had seen it, I believe. So I was like, yeah, let's just check it out because the new one's coming out, and pretty quick movie. So yeah.
Okay, and Neil, what did you know about Tron before Gideon brought it to the podcast? What's your history with this?
Pretty much nothing. I had seen some like stills of it before, and like it's definitely an influential film. Like I think everybody knows about like the light cycle races, and I'm sure there have been like a million knockoff games based on that. But I went into this pretty much blind. I haven't seen any of the new ones. For some reason, like it just didn't catch me to watch Tron Legacy, probably because I hadn't seen this originally.
Okay. Well, I guess my history with Tron is like I kind of tangentially knew that it was a early computer graphics heavy movie. I knew it was Disney. I knew it had Jeff Bridges, and I knew like kind of what it looked like. I had also seen some of its sequences referenced in other media. Like Dexter's Lab has a really extended light cycle sequence. That was obviously based on this movie. I feel like actually there's like a lot of media from the last 20 years that has referenced the light cycle thing, even things that aren't specifically Tron related. Like I think Family Guy has done Tron stuff before. So I kind of just knew it colloquially through the larger pop culture. I would also say that Kingdom Hearts 2 has a Tron level in it. I don't remember what happens, but you do go into the Tron world. You do the light cycles, and you dress up in the costumes, and so you get the general vibe and the aesthetic out of things. But I had never seen the movie. I've never seen Tron Legacy. I haven't listened to the Daft Punk soundtrack. I pretty much knew Dick Squiddly about the actual Tron itself. So that's my history. Again, what would you say your kind of 10,000-foot thoughts are on Tron?
Well, one quick thing I wanted to know, I didn't realize this was a Disney movie going in. And I kind of forgotten Tron Legacy was a Disney movie. High level thoughts. So initially I was kind of surprised at how you're like almost immediately like thrust into I don't know what exactly the world is called, if it's called like Tron, or I'll just call it like cyberspace or whatever. And then, they go back to the real world, and I was almost like worried we weren't gonna get like a lot of that digital world, and I was worried like a lot of the movie was gonna be in like real life, and it'd just be like I don't know, 30 minutes tops. But yeah, I mean, it was a bit much, and I was kind of shocked at like how much they were kind of throwing at you, and it was like kind of a lot to take in. Obviously, I think the visuals and everything, that's, you know, anybody's gonna say that's like the standout and the main thing. It's like, you know, really cool in that way. I really dug it, and it kind of, for me, it like reawakens like a kind of childlike wonder that I remember when I was like a kid playing like Riven and Myst on like the family computer, and just wondering like the whole time I was watching this movie, I was like, how the hell did they do any of this, especially in 82? And I posted a video in the Discord about, you know, kind of breaking down like how they did the visual effects and stuff. Really, really cool, really interesting. And yeah, so it's, you know, I think it is a bit goofy and kind of silly in like a family Disney way. But on the whole, I had a really good time, and I think it's probably a new like comfort movie for me.
Yeah, I could see that. Neil, you've hinted that you're a little less positive on it. Go ahead and let me hear it.
So about like 30 minutes into the movie, I Google searched to see if this was based on a book. Because to me it has the vibes of like some like
Dune.
yeah, like an adaptation where they cut out significant chunks of lore and exposition. It isn't based on a book, but I would bet that the but I saw that Disney like cut down the script a ton. I would bet that the this was like originally seen as like a 3-hour movie because at least like the way the script was probably written. Like this is just a guess on my part, but this movie does not do a good job of explaining itself. And like I don't need my handheld. I don't need like everything
Like me.
explained in detail, but you know, like Jeff Bridges, like when he gets sucked into the digital world, is just like he just adapts very quickly. Like nobody explains to him where he is or what's up. He's like, yeah, okay, I guess I'm here. I'm just gonna play some death games and like he's just like very nonchalant. And then apparently if you're a what do they call them, the users, like if you're a programmer and you get sucked into the digital world, apparently you just, you know, get god powers and can reconstruct the world around you. It's just very like this movie runs on vibes and visuals and not on the story. The other comparison that I made was, do you guys remember a like 90s early CGI? I guess it wouldn't be early because this was like the first movie with CGI. But it was a show called Reboot.
Oh, of course.
I mean, I don't think so. I'm gonna look it up.
Getting you would absolutely remember this show. It was like on Cartoon Network, and it was like this was such a Gideon coded show.
I probably only saw this in my nightmares. I don't think I ever sat down and watched this. I'm looking at it right now, and I gotta like click off because I feel like it's gonna come out of the screen and like try and choke me or something.
The graphics of Reboot kind of remind me of a lot of those early CG interstitials from Courage the Cowardly Dog, where they would like cut to something freaky in 3D.
Like return the slab.
Yeah, or just there's a lot of those, but anyway, sorry,
Yeah,
Neil.
you're good.
Just like the way that in Tron, like these programs are playing death games against each other because programs are people here, and they're just like, you know, like so they're sort of murdering each other. And in Reboot, you had all these. I didn't understand it at the time, but there were like these little robots, and some were tall and some were round, and I realize now that they're like binary, they're supposed to be the code, but
mm-hmm.
when a player dropped in a game into the world of Reboot, like these innocent civilian code beings were like trapped in it, and it became a death game for them. So that was the big comparison in my mind.
I see.
Final 10,000 foot thought was all the fucking rotoscoping in this movie must have been just the biggest pain.
Oh yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Like absolutely ridiculous.
Yeah, I was checking out some kind of like breakdowns of videos today before the podcast of just like how they did some of the special effects, and it sounds like, yeah, they had to like cut out the eyes for like each frame and the teeth so they could like appear white, and like some frames would have to get like 20 different like passes of, I forget the technical term, but just it sounds like it was so labor intensive and tedious, and just like so much of that just like constantly. So I mean, props to them for doing it, but yeah, it sounds like it must have been a huge headache and undertaking.
Gideon, did any of your technical breakdown videos mention the fact that they filmed it with the same cameras as Lawrence of Arabia?
I don't think so. I think they mentioned how it's like in black and white a lot of it, and it's black and white on like a black soundstage. And mm-hmm. I think they shot it on 60mm, I believe.
Right. Yeah, it was. Yeah, that's what I'm talking about. It was shot on like 70mm Panavision, which is what Lawrence was shot.
Okay.
One. Just in line with that. So, David Warner, the guy who plays all the antagonists in the movie, mm-hmm. His role was originally offered to Peter O'Toole, who played Lawrence of Arabia.
Oh hmm. Wow.
Which character, Neil?
Sark, right?
Yeah. So
okay.
Well, the thing is that Sark, the
Zordon looking guy.
The central control and the executive are all the same actor.
Right. Right.
Well, that kind of like runs into something that this made me feel incredibly stupid when I realized it. It's kind of like Wizard of Oz, where everybody in the real world is represented mm-hmm. by a character in the virtual world as well. It was like way too late into the movie when I realized that. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't help because Jeff Bridges and the other male, like the guy who plays Tron, look very similar when they're in the Tron suits. That's like mm-hmm. at least 70% of my confusion with this movie is not being able to tell Tron from Flynn when they're in the virtual world.
Yeah.
It's something about the coloration of the suits and the limitations of like they have a helmet and a clean shaven face and dark eyes, and then they all just kind of like run together for me. Neil, I was also right there with you on I'm sorry, did you get everything you wanted to say into kind of your 10,000 foot thoughts? Because now I feel like I'm going into my 10,000 foot thoughts.
Go for it.
Okay. I had the same reaction as you, where when we started this movie and it, you know, like, you know, the first few minutes play is like 2 or 3 minutes of it. And I paused it to make sure that I had not like accidentally skipped to 20 minutes into the movie.
Right.
The first like 5 to 10 minutes of this movie is horrible. Like there's no way they should have started it off with no explanation. And yeah. They're dropping like user and program, and they're like in the middle of this world. They're making no attempt to explain what's going on. And so they just drop you in. I rewinded it to make sure like I hadn't missed anything. And sure enough, I hadn't actually missed anything. They just, mm-hmm. you know, and they say that an audience is very receptive to the world of a new movie for the first 10 to 15 minutes. An audience is very like open to, oh, what kind of movie is this going to be? What kind of world do you want to show me? So you really have to get that first 15 minutes right. And immediately they were just like confusing the absolute shit out of me with this. So mm-hmm. when it cut back to the real world and they're like, okay, this is the mega corporation and this guy used to work here and now he makes arcade games and the boss is a dickhead who stole the ideas for the game. That all made sense to me relatively, right? Like once it was out in the real world, it was just this kind of like cool 80s adventure with you know, like two guys that are kind of like weirdly into the same chick, and she's kind of like weirdly into just stop for a minute. Holy shit, the blonde chick in this movie is so attractive. I couldn't believe that she'd never been in anything else. I looked up her filmography. She's in this and she's in Caddyshack, and that's like it.
Wow.
Okay, who is she in Caddyshack?
She has a joke name. But she's like the hot chick in Caddyshack. Her name, the actress's name is Cindy Morgan.
Huh.
Yeah, I'm looking her up right now because Caddyshack is something that I've considered bringing to the podcast a couple times.
Mm. Okay.
Yeah.
She's that. In. That'd be a good but thing. She's so attractive, and she's like not in anything else. She's from this era, like hardly anything.
Yeah, a couple TV shows, but only 3 episodes in Chips and 16 mm-hmm. episodes in Falcon Crest. That's crazy. Yeah, that's interesting.
And so that was a shame. I will also say the guy who plays not Flynn, is the other guy's name Alan?
Yeah.
Not a very good actor. I don't know if you guys got the same vibe, but I thought that guy was like straight up pretty bad.
Yeah, he's fine. He's just whatever.
Now, I can forgive a science fiction movie that's like a little light on plot and story. Like obviously I really love Blade Runner, so nothing new there. I would say Tron really takes this to the edge, where it's like, okay, I can forgive it being light on plot, but like Tron with the characters and the story is like, you basically just have to write it off entirely. But I will say that I thought the technical production of the movie was phenomenal. I hate the look of the suits themselves, but all the rotoscoping looks cool. I love the visual design of the virtual world. It's like, Gideon, you told me it's like one of the best OLED movies. I totally agree with you. It looks OLED awesome TV. On a good TV.
Same with the second one, but I'll get to that later.
Yeah, I would imagine that's true as well. So yeah, visually, I think it's like a really unique, interesting world. There is some novel stuff there. I think Jeff Bridges is really good in this movie, just like he's really good in every movie. I think that it has an interesting world and a good look, but for me, there's just not enough of an actual movie here for me to get invested. Like it was only 90 minutes, and I was like, when is this going to be over? Like let's wrap this up. I'm ready to. Then all of a sudden, Tron is still alive. How the fuck did that happen? It was just a confusing, mess for me.
Even though I definitely seem like I liked it more than you guys, I totally agree. My first watch, I was confused a large portion of the movie, and when I was like rewatching it just to kind of get a refresher because my brain is like totally fried from just like stuff from work, but I was like, wow, this movie like really lends and benefits the viewer if you've already seen it once. And I wonder if that kind of led to its like, I know it's kind of like a cult classic and not really a smash box office hit or anything. I don't think it performed super well. So I wonder if that kind of harmed it. Cause it's like, I feel like it'd be harder to revisit a movie back in like 82 and like, you know, I don't think they'd be able to get like a home release or anything like that, around that time. That quickly.
Well, one thing was that this movie flopped pretty hard, and so they released it a second time like half a year later, and it flopped even harder.
Damn.
Oh, they gave it the Morbius treatment.
Yeah, basically.
Brutal.
Dude, what are we doing Morbius for the podcast?
you can use your pick on that.
Yeah, you can use your pick. Yeah.
That really shouldn't be the movie that we dedicate to your aunt.
God damn.
I bet you anything that this movie was huge on Laserdisc.
Oh, I bet.
<In the 80s. laughs> I bet this was like, yeah, because you know, I think we've talked about this before, but how like some movies just are tailor made for like the nerdy home video audience,
right?
Like the same guys who get their 4K. I like. Blade Runner 2049 didn't do very well, but I bet you that it's like one of the top 4K Blu-rays.
Oh yeah.
You know, because it's like just that kind of guy that is going to want that movie. Similarly, I bet in the 80s, I bet the like the best-selling Laserdisc ever was Tron. I'll try to find some information on that when you while you guys keep talking.
Well, I could mention just a little bit about Tron Legacy and kind of comparing the two. So I was like, so shortly before I picked this, or a little bit after, Disney just kind of surprise announced that Tron 1 and Tron Legacy were coming to 4K Blu-ray for the first time, and people were like really hyped. But it was also coming out, it's coming out in just like a week or two now, but it was like a 2 or 3 week window when they announced it. And so everyone in the 4K Blu-ray community is like scrambling to try and get their copies, and it just keeps like selling out. It's a whole thing. But where like this one, obviously, you know, we kind of talk about like the style over substance. Tron Legacy is like that to the nth degree. And Tron Legacy is the same director who recently did F1. He did Top Gun Maverick. He did Oblivion from 2013 with Tom Cruise, which are all like very visual flair type of movies. And, you know, I remember being really high on Tron Legacy, but upon revisiting it, it's like, man, it's like screenwriting is pretty bad. The writing in general is pretty abysmal, and it definitely drags even more. Like, it's like a 2 hour, maybe 2:10 movie, and I feel like Tron 1 packs so much more into the world and the universe, and like there's a lot you can kind of dig into, whereas like there's literally like a 10 minute just like exposition dinner talking scene in Tron Legacy. It's like, why the fuck are we doing this? And it's like totally worth watching just to turn your brain off and enjoy. You know, it looked incredible on the OLED, especially at night. And the soundtrack is like an all-timer, just really, really incredible. But there's so many moments where it's like, why the fuck is this guy on screen for like 5 minutes just being weird and goofy and stupid? Whereas like, you know, Jeff Bridges is weird and goofy in this one a lot. But this movie, I would say for the weirdness, it has a lot of charm. Where in Legacy, it's so much just like kind of soulless in a way. Like, I don't know. There's just a lot of problems with that. And it's like, it's really fun just to experience for the audiovisual stuff. But I was just like, damn. Like, I was leading into both these. I thought I was going to come out still thinking like Legacy was my favorite. And now I've kind of like flipped of these two. Yeah.
Okay, so you like original Tron a little bit more than Legacy at this point.
Yeah, definitely now at this point, yeah.
Okay. Well, I think that like it's when a Legacy sequel, pun intended, I guess, comes out, it's so nice when it kind of it's nice when it kind of acknowledges the legacy of the original movie in that way. Like again, not to go back to this, but like 2049 being a slow, thought-provoking detective movie that is like technically excellent and more about the technical side of things than the plot is like the most perfect tribute to Blade Runner ever. Like, they understood the assignment, right? To borrow a phrase from the youths. It's cool that Tron kind of understands its own legacy as kind of like a mood bath kind of tonal movie and not much of a story plot heavy one. This is a good like film in 40s movie, I thought, like Tron. Like, maybe a little boring, but we could have like sat there and like made fun of it. How do you feel about that, Neil? Like, would this be a good movie with the bros?
I think so, with sort of the right bros. Like, unfortunately, like there aren't enough like while it is like visually interesting, there aren't a lot of like whoa moments. That was actually like a complaint I had watching it, is that, again, like while it's visually interesting, the rules within the game universe are loose to nothing. Part of me wondered if this was kind of like with Spinal Tap, where like I'm not enough of a computer coding engineer to really get some things.
Mm-hmm.
But like, I didn't understand what those like weird gates that were chasing people around were, like beyond like security. When they like break out of the light cycle arena, oh, you can just do that? Like you just need somebody to smash into the wall and blow up, and all of a sudden there's a tunnel that leads somewhere else. Like,
exactly where you need to go.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was just like, what?
I was or, laughing. Or go ahead, Neil, sorry.
Or just like later when they're being chased by those CGI tanks and Jeff Bridges is like, man, I wish I hadn't written all those tank programs. Like, what's a tank program? What are you talking about? I think that if this movie hadn't been like so progressive in the visuals, like this would have been similar to a 40s night. Like I think this movie's like two steps away from being a Mystery Science Theater type thing.
Damn. Wow.
Yeah, I'm kind of there with you, Neil. Like, I don't think it's like, you know, like some of the really low end MST3K kind of stuff, but it is definitely like a schlocky 80s. You know, we have the technology, and we're trying to make a movie around the technology kind of deal. I will also say people were like, "Oh yeah, this is 82. It's so impressive for 82." But my argument against that would be like, Empire Strikes Back came out in 81, and Empire Strikes Back looks a million times better than this movie does. I know they're not going for exactly the same thing, you know, like it Empire Strikes Back is taking place on real sets, and they you know, with real actors and real camera, they didn't rotoscope the entire thing. But Star Wars and Empire Strikes Back, I think, are both much more technically impressive than Tron.
Mm-hmm. It's kind of like that line from Jurassic Park, like, you know, you spent so much time thinking about whether or not you could that you didn't ask yourself if you should.
Yeah, that's kind of a good one. I would also say, like, another movie it kind of reminds me of in terms of like the mass amount of rotoscoping is Roger Rabbit, and Roger Rabbit looks a lot better than this movie does too. I know that was like a few years later, like maybe late 80s, 88, 89, but
well, so it's fun fact about
go ahead.
Just fun fact about that. This was among like the first couple of movies that convinced Disney to make Touchstone Pictures, which made Roger Rabbit, because they felt it didn't fit with, you know, the general Disney vibe.
So was this Touchstone, or was this proper Disney?
This was proper Disney, but you know, because it was like weird and kind of experimental and a little more adult, they're like, maybe we should make Touchstone Pictures for these kinds of movies.
For like their adult audiences, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, that's where Miramax comes in too, because Miramax is technically owned by Disney, but Miramax was publishing, you know, Tarantino movies and shit like that. So they had, it's so they could get away from the Disney name. What else do you guys want to pull out with Tron? I feel like we haven't really mentioned the plot. Do you want to give a brief to get in? Do you want to try to give a brief synopsis of what's going on here?
Yeah, even when I was like, that was partly why I even rewatched some of it. I was like, gun to my head, you tell me what's about, I'm going to struggle. I mean, basically, yeah, it's like, you know, Kevin Flynn, he's this like computer whiz, and he had made these like five games, and then this asshole guy, I forget his name, he basically acts like those are his games, and he effectively like boots Kevin out of the company, and he like rises to power and becomes like an exec. And so Kevin is trying to like hack into the mainframe or whatever, you know, and find the evidence that proves that the games are his, and kind of get back to just being in the company and like doing his own thing within that. And so, you know, he is going, you know, him and his weird love triangle with Alan and I forget the girl's name, but they, you know, he gets accidentally zapped in the Tron world, and then he's just on this cyber adventure trying to basically accomplish what he was doing in the real world, but now he's in there. And he ends up kind of like, in a way, I guess, I don't know, like liberating the different programs and stuff that are under this like weird control of Sark and everything. I don't know. It's a bit convoluted and confusing for me to try and explain it, but
it's a bit loose. I mean, it's not presented as being over. It's kind of a way of getting us from set piece to set piece.
Mm-hmm.
Would everybody agree that the light cycle bit is the best part of this movie?
I like that. Go ahead.
I was going to say, I think the, like, I don't know what you call it, like volleyball match at the beginning
is probably high the life? Best.
Yeah. Like, so one thing is that, with light cycles that I had an issue with is that it was like visually confused. Where, you know, throughout the movie, like good people are highlighted in blue and bad people are highlighted in red. Okay, easy enough, you know, but then you get to the light cycle and the blue cars are now the bad guys, and the yellow shades that are slightly different are the three characters that we're following. It's like, why did you make this choice?
That's a good point.
So, you know, that's definitely a nitpick, but I was just like, okay.
One thing I want to talk about, I was confused on too, is, you know, Tron is like this program that Alan wrote, and, you know, they have the arcade game that's also in the cyberspace, that's the light cycles, but in the second movie, the arcade cabinet is called Tron, but it's the light cycle game. And I was always like, I thought Tron was a place. I was like, I didn't know Tron was like a person or like a character, you know? And then it's like, he kind of is, but I've also heard it called like the Tron world. So it's like, I feel like that gets pretty bogged down and confusing. And I like what you brought up with the colors, because that's kind of like how you identify with, okay, yeah, these are the good guys and the bad guys. And yeah, that does get confusing.
Like this is the opposite of like a Tolkien work, where, you know, like there's a huge index with names, places, dates, and this is just like we're gonna occasionally like throw some names out, but we're not gonna explain anything. Like, you know, some of them are self-explanatory, like Master Control. Okay, that makes sense. But like even like the real world stuff doesn't make sense to me. So like there's the corporate face of David Warner, the actor, Ed Dillinger. So he made his way into the company by stealing Jeff Bridges' ideas. So I guess like having fun 80s video game ideas is enough to make you like a CEO now. But you know, this company's like also digitizing fruit. So I feel like that's the bigger, that's the more interesting thing than the video games, guys.
What movie did we just do that had the same problem? I'm forgetting what it was. Oh, no, we were just playing, me and Xander were saying, we're playing Inside Out, and our whole point about Inside Out, like the villain, is like trying to harvest these novelist book ideas to like make books. Split fiction. Yeah. And he's like trying to harvest these novelist ideas so he can publish, like, steal their ideas and publish a bunch of like fantasy and sci-fi novels. Meanwhile, he actually has the technology to like put you in a virtual world and go see your dead relatives. Like, and he isn't selling that instead. It's just like so silly. But yes, yeah, I agree with you, Neil. The beaming yourself into the Matrix laser is way better than like, you know, this dude made a fucking 80s. Every video game in the 80s was designed by like two people. So this guy, you know, Jeff Bridges wasn't losing out on all that much.
Yeah. Or, and then like at the end of the movie, when they've shown that Jeff Bridges got plagiarized from, all of a sudden he's the CEO. Like, yeah, the company rehired him to be the CEO. Central Control is like stealing programs, like it's stealing like accounting programs and military programs, and it's like, okay, so we've got a rampant AI basically. But that's not what we're like yes, it's the antagonist, but the point of the movie isn't to stop him.
Yeah,
like it's not wrong for wanting to do that, like at least as far as our characters are concerned, that they just want to like escape and clear Jeff Bridges' name, kind of.
Yeah, it is silly when you break it down. It just kind of falls apart. Again, like I think we've all been saying that. I think nobody disagrees that the plot is pretty weak and not really what you're there for. I think it's
definitely
just
secondary.
I think we've all kind of come down to the same conclusion that it's just like, you know, how far are the visuals going to take you at the end of it? So I feel, unless anybody has any burning things that they want to get to, we're coming up on about an hour. So I would love to give scores and see what's in store for next week.
Okay. I have three like rapid fire funny things I wanted to mention.
Yeah, sure.
I love how like when the girl is like, you know, digitizing that orange or whatever, and she's like, here goes nothing. And then her like old senile coworker is like mansplaining how she's using like the wrong wording. I'm like, God, what a fucking asshole she has to work with. Yeah. So annoying. And I love that it's a Disney movie and like the heroes are called like users. And like I saw like they have like a Disney like roller coaster ride that's like a light cycle thing. And it was like, welcome users. I was like, all I think about when you say users is a bunch of like tweakers just like strung out. So that like really was making me laugh. And then lastly, like, yeah, when he just magically, Jeff Bridges becomes the CEO, like the way he fucking flew up in the helicopter at like a very steep angle and then is like right by his friends, I'm like, you're gonna kill somebody, dude. Like, holy shit. Like, calm
down. I thought
the
same thing. I thought he was gonna step into the spinning helicopter blade at
the
very end.
Yeah.
He was like, Jeff Bridges is really tall and it looked like he was about to like,
I was very nervous he was gonna like lift his arm up and it was gonna get chopped off or something.
That would have been a weird end to the movie.
Yeah,
we have to rebuild Jeff Bridges. I was just gonna say the thing that makes me laugh about the whole like they welcome users at the theme park is this is like my buddy's whole thing about going to Jurassic Park World in Universal Studios. He's like, did they say welcome? Because his whole fantasy is that he wants somebody to say welcome to Jurassic Park. he's like, if they don't say welcome, I'm not going.
Yeah, that's so funny. I'm with him on that. That's hilarious. Oh my God. Last thing, not a funny thing, just one thing this movie kind of made me realize. I've always liked Jeff Bridges, but this movie made me kind of realize, I was like, oh, I think I like really love Jeff Bridges. Like, he might be one of my favorites, and I didn't even fully realize it. Because I just think he's so charming and funny and sarcastic in this. And less so. He's more like Tron Jesus in Tron Legacy. And it's kind of weird, but it's all right.
Yeah, doesn't he show up like de-aged at the very end of the movie?
Dude, that is the fucking worst thing about Tron Legacy. It is horrifying. Like, I saw a Letterboxd review and they're like, PS3 Jeff Bridges, like, he looks fucking weird. But on the whole, like, the visuals still really really hold up, minus that is absolutely abomination style shit. But like, I feel like Tron Legacy still looks better than like some newer Marvel movies and stuff. And I think his visual flair, like I've talked about Top Gun Maverick, like that movie is a 10 out of 10 in the visuals, but like a 6 or 7 in the story. So, but yeah, I'm getting beside myself, but anyways. We can do
squash. How about you, Neil? Any burning thoughts?
My last two comments, I think, are first off, when I saw that David Warner was like, it was confusing at first because I think you see him as Sark first, and I was really excited because I like David Warner. He's in some probably like one of the best Star Trek: The Next Generation episodes, among some other movies. But and he's also in a historical drama that I really love. So I immediately recognized him. I was like, oh, that's great. And then I started listening. I was like, wait, is the master control voice him with like a voice changer? And then he's also the executive. And I was confused at first before I realized it was Wizard of Oz, like you said, Sam. But I just want to give him a big shout out. I really do love David Warner. But the other thing that I was just sort of laughing at, and this is also part of why I think like the script was cut down pretty drastically, is that we've previously met the female lead's human version, but we don't see her Tron version until there's only like 30 minutes left in the movie. I was like, that's the best we could do for her. She's just gonna show up in the last like 25 minutes to run around, I guess.
She just got done playing hockey or something with those pads on her legs.
Yeah, it was just the script is just definitely not finished. Whether it got gutted or needed to be re-edited, it just wasn't done.
Well, how about you follow up that with your score, Neil?
I'm gonna give it a 2. Like, I'm glad I've seen it. It's definitely culturally impactful for a lot of the right reasons, but I don't think I ever need to like rewatch it as a movie again. Maybe, you know, there's some fun scenes that, you know, maybe I'd pull up on YouTube from time to time, but I definitely don't need to watch it ever again. You know, it's not stimulating in a narrative way.
Totally fair.
Yeah, I kind of feel the same way. I'm also going to give it a 2 based on, like, you know, there's some great visual sequences. There's a very attractive blonde in glasses for 20 minutes in the beginning. It's not like totally irredeemable, I do appreciate it on a certain level of, this movie just has a lot of balls to come out in the era that it did and not have a plot and just go purely on visual. So I respect it on the purely on the balls shown. So I think that's, you know, there's something to be said about that. And I did like the parts where I thought all the live action stuff was really good. It's just like when they went to the virtual world, I just stopped giving a shit about it. Like, especially like the last half of the movie was not my favorite thing. So I would say like mid to low 2, somewhere in there is kind of where I'm landing. Obviously, Gideon, though, you're going to be our high point for the week. Much higher for you.
Oh yeah. I think I'm officially Tron pilled at this point. I initially was almost like more in the 3, but after kind of thinking about it more and even revisiting it, like, I've really grown to kind of love it, and I'll give it a 4. I gave Tron Legacy like a 3.5, but that's a lot of like nostalgia and just like loving the visual flair and soundtrack and stuff. But Tron Legacy is like pretty rough in a lot of regards, and that's like more definitely in the I would even say like in the 2 to 3 range. But yeah, I just really appreciate it. I mean, I love the visuals. I think the sound design is really cool too. I'm just totally blown away that they were able to accomplish any of this. And I think it's funny. I think it was like not nominated for any like visual awards, because at that time I think they wrote it off and basically said like using computers was like cheating, which is funny.
I did read that, and you are right, the sound design in this movie is excellent, and we forgot to shout that out earlier.
That's all good. But yeah, and I wonder, because this whole franchise is kind of like in this hit and miss, and I really appreciate hearing your guys' takes, because even just looking at like IMDb and Letterboxd, it seems pretty split. Like there's like really hardcore fans, and there's a lot of people that just kind of think it's whatever. So I appreciate hearing your guys' takes and where you came away with it. And I'm super curious with Tron Ares if it's going to be similar. You know, we got Mr. Morbius himself in it. Mm-hmm. So we'll see how that goes. But the music is being done by Trent Reznor of Nine Inch Nails.
And oh, hell yeah, dude.
I'm kind of worried with this the new one coming out that it's going to be like too much in the real world and not enough digital stuff. So I don't know. We just watched like a newer trailer just before this, and it seems like it almost is going to also be like emulating the style of the first movie at points. So I'm going to try and catch it in theaters. But regarding this one, back to it, yeah, I will give it a solid 4. I have a lot of love for this. I think it's charming. I think it's cheesy and strange, one of a kind, influential. It's iconic. It feels like a geek movie rite of passage, but I could totally understand where you guys are coming from. And I really appreciate your insight.
Mm-hmm. All right. So, I think it's Neil's turn for next week.
I think so.
Yeah. I'm hoping to, get a friend to guest star on that. So let me get back to you guys with the pick.
Okay.
Okay. We also have to, I think Jesse wanted to bring his dad at some point on the podcast. So maybe we'll check in with Jesse and see, or we wait until after, actually Jesse hasn't bothered me about that in a while. So maybe let's do Neil's, friend, and sure. Then we'll see if Jesse wants to do it after that. So yeah, just keep in touch, and I will be getting. I don't know if you want to try to finish up Gears of War now, but I could stay on and take a crack at that. Unless you're tired.
I probably can't tonight. I woke up at like 5:30 this morning, but yeah, tomorrow I should be good after like 6. Yeah.
Okay, I have band practice tomorrow night, but I can
probably Friday.
I'll be available after band practice for sure if I get home at a decent time. So we'll see.
Okay.
All right, guys. We'll keep your ears to the ground, and we'll catch you guys on the flippity floppity.
Sounds good. Thanks, boys.
See you guys.
Take care, guys.
Later.